Case for argument is Malik versus Mukasey. Mr. Lara.
Hey, please, the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Roland Lara, L-A-R-A, on behalf of the petitioners. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Your Honor, my clients are three citizens of Pakistan. When they arrived in this country, they were minors. Their father filed applications for asylum on their behalves, claiming that they were citizens of India and using the last name of Malik, M-A-L-I-K, which is the name that their father had chosen for their use in this country. Your Honor, it turns out that their last name is actually not Malik. That was not the name that they were given when they were in Pakistan. But there's nothing illegal and there's nothing fraudulent about choosing which last name you're going to use. However, they are citizens of Pakistan and not India. Before they reached majority, they withdrew their asylum applications, and they are now proceeding under their appropriate citizenship. Your Honor, the government's position has been that the case of Ali controls the jurisdictional issue here. We absolutely agree, Your Honor. The case of Ali, 502 F3rd 659, stands for the proposition that ordinarily motions of continuance, denials of a motion for continuance, are only reviewable if their denial would nullify an alien's statutory opportunity to adjust his status. Your Honors, that's exactly the situation that we have here. When the immigration judge denied my client's motion for continuance to present evidence that they were in fact married to United States citizens and that what's called an I-130 petition for an alien relative was actually pending with the Immigration Service, when the immigration judge denied that motion for continuance, it had the practical effect of denying their adjustment of status. In fact, this court has recently decided a case that's on point, the case of CETA, C-E-T-A, F-35, F-3rd, 639, the opinion written by Judge Ripple about 5 weeks ago. And that case, factually, is more on point here. The case of Ali concerned an alien who had asked for a motion for continuance because he said, in that case, that his son was going to get his green card, and he had hoped that once his son got the green card, he could then file for his own naturalization, or I'm sorry, for his green card. The court rightly found that such is not possible under immigration law. You can only file for a green card for a dependent relative if that person is your spouse or your unmarried minor child. In Ali, the controlling language was that the motion for continuance would have been futile. And that's the opposite case in CETA, and it's certainly the opposite case today. In CETA, the alien who was asking for the motion for continuance was asking for the motion for continuance for his adjustment of status. In our case, the adjustment of status, the basis for the adjustment of status is that all three of my clients, Your Honors, have married United States citizens. Their spouses are United States citizens. At the time of the hearing in 2005, the petitions had only recently been filed, so they did not have their receipt notices from the Immigration Service. However, they brought the women themselves. The women were actually present before the immigration judge, but the immigration judge refused to consider that
evidence. Well, he wanted some document.
I'm sorry?
He wanted some document, which was understandable.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that's one of the reasons that my clients had requested the motion for continuance. The merits hearing had happened on June 5th of 2005.
I don't understand. They produced these women. Why couldn't they have produced a document?
Well, Your Honor, they didn't have the receipt notices. And, Your Honor, to be frank, I don't know.
No, marriage licenses or anything.
Your Honor, to be frank, I don't know why they did not produce
those.
That's
pretty damaging. I mean, as the government pointed out, you could hire someone to come in and pose as your wife. Everybody gets married, has a certificate, you know, marriage license. So.
Your Honor, absolutely. And for that and other reasons, there are Lozada motions for ineffective counsel to reopen this matter. And those
well,
are
I don't understand that. I mean, you're supposed to, look, there's a serious problem with delay in these immigration proceedings. Obviously, this is a delay game. It's perfectly understandable, but these people think the longer they stay in the United States, the better their chance of developing, you know, equities that would permit them to regularize their status. So they can't just keep pushing all the evidence into these motions to reopen years later. You know, if you're having a hearing in which your marital status is material, you bring a marriage certificate, marriage license.
Your Honor, obviously that would have been better.
I don't think it's a matter of obviously been better. If it's not done, that certainly should entitle the immigration authorities to say, no, you're not married. We're not buying this.
Your Honor, the receipt notices were generated but 3 days after that hearing, and those receipt notices, in addition to the I-130 applications, or petitions rather, were submitted to the board. Your Honor, there are two levels of...
Well, are there marriage licenses in the record?
Your Honor, I believe that there are. I believe that those are attached to the...
I don't like that term, believe. Are they in the record or not?
Your Honor, as I stand here today, I'm not positive, so I can't...
Excuse me?
As I stand here today, I'm not positive, and so I can't...
Well, if they're not even in the record, I don't understand. I mean, you'd think if somehow they innocently fail to submit their marriage license, you'd think they'd certainly be in the record when they ask to reopen, right? Otherwise, it's completely non-credible.
Your Honor, one of my clients, Saad Malik, S-A-A-D, his petition, his I-130 petition, has already been approved. The other two are still pending. So, Your Honor, the fact that they didn't bring the marriage licenses to the hearing, which, by the way, was the first hearing after their withdrawal of the asylum petition, Your Honor. This has not been the case where they had asked for continuance after continuance. They had just filed these I-130 petitions based on their marriages to United States citizens. And, by the way, Your Honor, they're all married to these women today, and two of my clients have children with these women.
Look, we know a lot of people have children who are not married. That's ridiculous. You know, that's biologically naive.
Is the immigration judge in a case like this, there's this kind of backdrop of fraud and the claiming of Indian citizenship when they were the same immigration judge? Does he know about that when subsequently there's a adjustment of status situation and you want a continuance?
Yes,
that
sir,
judge
this,
knows that that's...
Your Honor, this was the same judge, and the judge did...
Yeah, but I mean, they have hundreds of cases. I don't know if they are conversant with everything. When this case is called that day and a lawyer stands up and says, we need a continuance here, does the judge know all this background of what's happening?
Your Honor, in this case, the judge did. The immigration judge's opinion that's part of the record and actually attached to our brief does discuss the fact that all of these issues were brought up on the same day. That brings me to my next point, Your Honor. There is the backdrop of alleged fraud in this case, and we have two points that we would like to discuss today. The first is that the alleged fraud, when it was made to the Immigration Service, was made when my clients were minors.
Yeah, but they're like 18 or something. It wasn't like they're 2-3 years old or something.
That's true, Your Honor, but they had come to this country in 2001.
But they knew they weren't from India.
That's true, Your Honor, but their father was the one that submitted these asylum applications on their behalf, Your Honor. They had just come from Pakistan in 2001. The asylum petitions were filed in 2002. Your Honor, there's not even any evidence in the record that they reviewed those asylum applications before they were submitted. And that's why we're here today, Your Honor. The motion for continuance that we were asking for before the immigration judge was so that we had the opportunity not only to present full evidence of their marriage to United States citizens, but so that there could be an evidentiary hearing regarding this alleged fraud. Under controlling precedent, there can only be fraud in this case that's relevant if there was the intent to deceive for the purposes of securing an immigration benefit, Your Honor. Unless the
I actually think, you know, the imputation of fraud from parent to children is pretty reasonable, because if the parent successfully engages in fraud for the benefit of his children, that means they're only admitted to the United States because of a fraud, their father's fraud. Now, why should anybody be permitted to benefit from a fraud?
Your Honor, the heightened level of scrutiny here is because first of all, fraud is not defined in the immigration statute. The common law definition of fraud is the one that we use in these situations. And in those cases, Your Honor, it is very important that the intent to deceive is on the person who...
No, it is. No, I don't agree with you, because look what you're saying. So if an alien has children, he'd like them to get into the United States. So he commits fraud, and he's caught, and so he's excluded. But the kids get in. He may be, you know, he may say, "Well, I've gotten half a loaf, right? At least I got my kids in." But he got them in by fraud, and if he told the truth, they wouldn't have been admitted either. So why should we permit this two-stage in which you get rewarded for your fraud by your kids getting in?
I will just briefly finish your answer to your question, Your Honor. Your Honor, that is the situation. First of all, that's not the situation here. Second of all, the law that is controlling here, Your Honor, is that to prove fraud, to assert fraud against an alien, that individual alien must have had the intent. And the case law is unwavering on this, Your Honor, that alien must have the
make
intent
any
to
sense,
deceive.
Right? It doesn't make any sense. That just rewards fraud.
Your Honor, the parent in that hypothetical.
Bring in 10 children, you commit fraud, they get in, they become Americans, which is fine probably, but nevertheless, that can't be the intention of the immigration laws to permit children to become permanent residents by reason of their family's fraud.
Well, Your Honor, it's certainly difficult to answer this question in the hypothetical, because within immigration law, Your Honor, there are many, many, many different ways for the government to exclude an individual alien, to remove an individual alien. But dealing with the specifics of this case here, Your Honor, my client's father had submitted these asylum applications on their behalf. First of all, we don't concede, and I would direct Your Honors to our argument regarding the use of their last name.
No, I understand.
Okay.
I understand.
But with respect to their claiming their citizenship as Indian, Your Honor, their father did that. It's not in the record why they did that. What we're asking Your Honors today is not to adjust their status, not to give them green cards today. What we're asking Your Honors today is to remand this back to the immigration judge so that a full hearing can actually be held on this, Your Honor. A full hearing, an evidentiary hearing, where proper testimony is taken and all the documentary evidence is placed in. Your Honor, that's what we're asking for today.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lara. Ms. Stewart?
Thank you, Your Honor. Karen Stewart with the Department of Justice for the Attorney General. Your Honor, I'd just like to correct the factual record, if I may, because I believe that the petitioner's counsel's rendition of it was flawed. even though all three of the children were under 21 when they arrived in the United States, there was one of the boys who turned 21 and filed his own asylum application and actually was interviewed under oath by an asylum officer. to the extent that the counsel would like to debate about whether or not there was fraud, we have two different and distinct situations, in at least with respect to the oldest child who filed an asylum application in his own right. It was over 21 at the time. Your Honor, the issue is whether or not the reasons that the agency provided for denying the continuance are consistent with the adjustment statute or whether or not the decision falls within the subpoena exception. And we've relied on the cases of PD and Wood, which we think are really on all fours with this, for the proposition that whereas here the IJ and the board make a determination on the merits of the adjustment application, and here the agency found that even if you were to assume that all of the I's had been dotted and the T's crossed with respect to the first basis for the denial, and that is that they hadn't proven prima facie eligibility for adjustment, even if we considered all of that as being proper, the adjustment application would still be denied because of the petitioner's role in perpetrating a fraud on the immigration court for purposes of obtaining an immigration benefit. Now, there are sworn statements in the record, Your Honor, that we have cited to in our briefs, in which each of the three petitioners gave a statement under oath to the FBI admitting to the fraud and giving the explanation that they indicated falsely that they were Indian citizens because they were promised a better life. So there is a sworn statement indicating that there was knowledge of the falsity and intent to deceive.
A statement signed by the petitioners?
That's correct.
The kids?
Yes, Your Honor. One for all three. We even if the court were to find that it has jurisdiction, there is certainly information and evidence in the record that would show that the agency's determination was not an abuse of discretion, and there's certainly evidence of a fraud. But apart from that, the immigration judge denied adjustment as a matter of discretion. That is something that is generally uncabined and is something that a decision that is not subject to judicial review. And the basis for that determination wasn't necessarily, you know, having to prove fraud by any standard. To the extent that the immigration judge exercised the discretion that exercised the determination that a favorable exercise of discretion would not be germane based upon their role, whatever their role was, even if it didn't rise to the level of fraud, which in this case it does, but even if that were not the case, the immigration judge still had the discretion to determine that their role in the matter was sufficient to warrant an unfavorable, to warrant no adjustment of status. And given that's the case, Wood and PD would support the government's position that futility in the continuance is, because it would be futile, is a legitimate reason, because there is the determination on the merits of the adjustment of status. This is not a situation where the denial of the continuance is having an impact of preventing them from going forward with adjustment.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Stewart, and thank you, Mr. Lara. Your time has expired. Your time has expired unless you have something of vital interest.
Just very briefly with respect to the statements made by my clients to the FBI, part of a sting against an individual who had been, for lack of a better word, preying on aliens coming to this country. The only evidence that the state has cited to is this allegation that they said that they claim that they were Indian citizens to get a better life, Your Honor. What that means, Your Honor, is open to wide interpretation. It's for that reason that there should be a hearing conducted by the immigration judge with respect to this alleged fraud.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel, and court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.